InvestorIdeas.com podcast. Hello and welcome to another episode of InvestorIdeas.com podcast. In today's podcast, I'm going to be going over a few public company announcements, the state of cannabis regulations in Canada, as well as the lack of analysts covering the U.S. cannabis industry. So in recent news from CTV News as well as CNBC and a few other news outlets, they discussed how there was a recent submission from the Competitive Bureau towards Health Canada reviewing the cannabis legislation published last Friday, specifically regarding THC limits and giving pot companies more freedoms around packaging and marketing as a way to boost competition, something that has been discussed pretty much since the inception of legalization within the Canadian market. Now, the Bureau believes that stronger competition in the cannabis industry would help foster innovation and benefit customers by providing them with increased choice and quality. Importantly, these benefits would serve to further displace illicit market activity and bolster the legal cannabis industry. Now, a 2022 survey from Health Canada found that nearly half of the 10,000 respondents who used cannabis in the past year purchased the substance exclusively from legal sources, which was an increase from 43% in 2021. Now, some believe that the true share of the illicit market is higher because of the stigma around revealing cannabis use, which does seem to have some legitimacy. Now, cannabis producers and shops have long felt that THC and packaging changes would chisel away at the market share illicit sellers have and help them reduce the hefty number of layoffs, facility closures, and write-downs they've taken in recent years to keep their businesses afloat. Stakeholders have told the Bureau increasing the limit to 100 milligrams for edibles could make edible cannabis products more appealing to consumers, especially those currently sourcing them from the illicit market, something I have talked about many times. And the Bureau suggested easing restrictions on cannabis promotion, packaging, and labeling, which would also give producers more room to innovate and help consumers make more informed purchasing decisions. And the Bureau also took aim at the cannabis licensing process and compliance costs, suggesting that they be made minimally intrusive to competition where possible. Now, right now, the process currently requires cannabis producers to have facilities near completed, a process that often costs millions before they can even have their licenses reviewed. And then there are lengthy and costly security requirements and annual regulatory fees. By minimizing the regulatory burden of the licensing process and reducing compliance costs where possible, decision makers can reduce barriers to entry and expansion, as well as to stimulate even more effective competition. Now, rounding out the recommendations was a suggestion regarding excise duties, an area outside the panel reviewing the Act's purview. Now, the duties are imposed on products where they are delivered to buyers, so for dried and fresh cannabis plants and seeds, as well as the product itself, they amount to higher of $1 per gram or 10 cents per gram fee. For edibles, extracts, and topicals, it's a flat rate based on the number of milligrams of total THC in the product, and there are additional duties in Alberta, Nunavut, Ontario, and Saskatchewan. Now, the total number of unpaid cannabis excise duties has risen since legalization, and the Bureau has found that as of September of 2022, 66% of licensees required to remit excise duties had an outstanding debt with the Canadian Revenue Agency. Many stakeholders interviewed by the Bureau raised Canada's excise duty framework and excise duty rates specifically as a major barrier to competition in the cannabis industry, the submission said. And these stakeholders told the Bureau that the current excise duty regime makes profitability and viability in the industry very challenging. So obviously there's been a lot of financial reports and different events within the Canadian industry that obviously support a lot of these discussions here and also show the obvious downsides of not changing these regulations to be more favorable for the legal industry. This is something that Canada has faced very heavily. This is also the same thing going on in California to a different scale, but still a lot of the same problems. When you're looking at high taxation, you're looking at a high cost for barrier of entry for new businesses. This also tends to exclude lots of small to medium-sized cannabis producers or operators from really entering in because they have to wait for a certain amount of time to basically gain enough finances to be able to create their facility so they can get it into the review process. And the biggest thing that everyone talks about in both of these markets, whether you're looking at Canada or California, is that this allows the illicit market to compete sort of unevenly with the illegal market. And this is why the illicit market continues to thrive, is because they have unfair competitive advantages over the legal market. And until we start addressing those challenges, there's really not going to be a chance for the legal market to completely overtake the illicit market. So The Competition Bureau has officially submitted this towards Health Canada. We'll see what happens. Again, this has been discussed from a lot of different groups, a lot of cannabis lobbying groups in Canada, a lot of different groups in the US as well. I don't know whether this will actually get changed in any meaningful way. I think that the THC limits could probably be the first and easiest step to accomplish. I think that changing the taxation and the licensing operations is going to be a much harder sell to Health Canada. Obviously, they're collecting a lot of money from these taxation things, so it's a good thing for them. I don't think they're going to change that too dramatically anytime soon. And as well, for the licensing application and sort of the cost of operations, I see that that's going to be a harder thing to change as well, just because everyone's going to cite that this is all about safety, this is all about quality control, even though it doesn't really guarantee safety or quality control in any meaningful way. That will be sort of the precedent they can cite there. So I would imagine that THC limits would be the potential win here that could come through. At least for edibles, I think that would make a big change. It's a big thing that's holding back sort of the edibles market in Canada, is the fact that you have these really low doses still. And for a lot of people who have a higher tolerance, or any people who have come from the medical side and are looking, you know, for some products from recreational markets, there's not really an option for them. Just because a 10 milligram dose isn't going to give them the effect that they need. So I think that would be the likely option that could change within the Canadian market within the next year. It's been discussed by a lot of different groups, and this is another one pushing it forward. But I think a lot of the other issues, when you're looking at taxation and basically the entire regulatory process surrounding creating a cannabis business, either in Canada or the rest of the world, I don't think that's going to change anytime soon, because people are still very scared of cannabis, as I've talked about many times. When you look at a lot of the different news stories that are circulating around cannabis these days, most of them still maintain to be quite negative or skeptical of the benefits of the plant, and in general urge caution towards pretty much all consumers. Now, looking at some public company announcements, so Avicanna Incorporated, trading on the TSX as ABCN and the OTCQX as ABCNF, announced the execution of a definitive assets purchase agreement between Shoppers Drug Mart and Avicanna for Avicanna's acquisition of assets of the medical cannabis by Shoppers business, with the final closing date set for July 31st of this year. Now, since the initial announcement in March of this year, we have worked diligently and collaboratively to develop and execute a seamless process for transitioning patients and address various patient product and operation matters through the build-out of MyMedi.ca. Now, we wish to express our thanks to everyone involved, and in particular to Shoppers Drug Mart team, for getting us to this exciting milestone, stated Erez Azadian, the CEO of Avicanna Incorporated. Now, as part of the agreement terms, Avicanna will acquire specific assets of the business, including inventory and equipment, for approximately $2.6 million, and will pay Shoppers on a base earnout based on net revenues for the period of 2 years. And during the transition period, patients of medical cannabis by Shoppers are still able to purchase products on the medical cannabis by Shoppers platform until the closing of the transaction at the end of July, and then the MyMedi.ca platform will be launched on the closing date of the transaction, at which point patients will be able to purchase through MyMedi.ca. So when you're looking at, I talked very early about the medical cannabis by Shoppers program. Obviously, this is specifically focused on the online platform of it, which hasn't really been a huge success. I do think that Avicanna could probably do more with it than Shoppers has. And I do think that this also continues to show that, at least within the Canadian market, there still is a lot of development that can be there for the medical cannabis industry. Again, it's still very kind of immature when you're looking at how long cannabis has been involved, supposedly medically, in most of the world, and sort of how underdeveloped most medical cannabis systems are. Again, there's not really a good example when you're looking at either the US or Canada of an area where they have medical and recreational, and the medical has been maintained and thoroughly developed. A lot of the times what we see is there's medical markets that can exist on their own, and then once recreational comes in, the medical market seems to drop away, or at least lose a lot of the key players or a lot of its key benefits, and very much true in Canada. So I do think it's interesting to see that they've acquired the medical cannabis by Shoppers Drug Mart. I think it'll be much better potentially as MyMedi.ca with Avicanna. I think they seem more motivated to actually expand it out and do more with it. And there's a lot of Canadian businesses now that are starting to turn back to medical because they do realize that this is an underserved market and that there is a lot of potential here if they're willing to do the work and get things done and sort of built out within that system. I was very optimistic about the Shoppers Drug Mart sort of system that was going to be in place in Canada. We didn't really see it materialize into much. I don't believe that there's a huge amount of patients who are going to Shoppers Drug Mart regularly, and I know not a lot of them are buying through the online platform either. So that is why I think it will be beneficial to move to a different company. But definitely something to pay attention to in both the US and Canada is the continued development of the medical market. I think it's still a very underserved market. I know a lot of people are focusing on recreational, but within the recreational market, there are a lot of different limitations and also a lot of different competition factors. And hopefully as well, some companies are also motivated through the, you know, idea of being moralistic or however you want to put it, on focusing on the medical industry, because that is the industry that gives the most validity and sort of integrity to the cannabis industry and gives the data that sort of pushes out the information that would say that cannabis isn't dangerous and that it is beneficial, which still needs to be pushed very heavily. I think that that's kind of the problem, which I'll talk about at the end here, is that for a lot of people who have been attached to the cannabis industry or very focused on cannabis, we've been trapped in our own bubble and have only seen that this is a positive thing. And obviously people would be stupid not to endorse this. But for a lot of other people, they still need much more data and much more convincing. And that's going to come from the medical market. So it's a good strategy for everyone to build out and continue to expand the medical markets throughout the world, because that's going to give the most sort of integrity and validity to this cannabis industry. Next, looking at Fire and Flower Holdings Corporation, trading on the TSX as FAF and the OTCQX as FFLWF, who announced it's engaged a financial advisor to assist the company with reviewing strategic options, including financing options. As disclosed in the company's interim financial statements and management discussion and analysis released on May 15th, the company will require additional financing and is actively pursuing financing options to raise additional capital in order to fund its operations, meet its future growth targets, and continue to operate as going. So there's no assurance that these initiatives will be successful, timely, or sufficient. And you can read more on the company's SEDAR profile or go to their website at investors.fireandflower.com. Now, this relates to the last bit, which is that in a recent MDBiz article, apparently fewer research analysts are covering the U.S. cannabis industry, which experts say reflects the challenging economic headwinds facing the industry, including high taxes, high interest rates, rock-bottom stock prices, and the slow pace of federal MJ reform. So again, things that I already talked about many times before, as well within the Canadian landscape. But essentially, overall, you're seeing that because the industry is being hit from so many different angles, so because of high taxations, a lot of these companies are having trouble basically maintaining operations. So a lot of them are looking to every source possible for financing. A problem there is in the U.S., because of federal restrictions, there isn't a lot of options for financing, so they are having to go to sort of less ideal sources most of the time or make riskier business decisions. The talk about safe banking has been something that's been discussed for a long time that would be a massive benefit to the industry, and no matter how many times it's talked about, nothing actually happens, though. And that's a big problem, because none of these companies can get traditional financing. And even, for example, a Fire and Flower Holdings Corporation, they're mainly based in Canada, but they are moving some of their assets into the U.S. But even for them, continuing to get financing, continuing to get what they need to expand their business, to deal with the high taxation, to deal with the high overhead of running their operations is difficult. And because a lot of these stocks have tanked over a long time, because it's mainly just retail investors, most of these companies now aren't able to get sort of the traditional funding even through investors, because most of the investors have kind of lost interest in a lot of ways. And because investors have lost interest, so have the analysts. So New York-based Cantor Fitzgerald and Cohen are among the most notable financial services that have dropped from covering the U.S. plant-touching cannabis companies. It speaks to the unhealthy state of our industry. Jesse Redmond, the managing director of the cannabis sector and head of research at Florida-based Water Tower Research, told MJBiz Daily. Now, the advisor shares per U.S. cannabis ETF, which tracks major U.S. cannabis stocks under the symbol MSOS, has fallen to just over $5 from a high of more than $56 in February of 2021. And in addition, cannabis companies are increasingly turning to debt financing rather than equity raises, which means that there's a smaller audience for research. Again, this speaks to Fire and Flower Holdings Corporation looking to engage a financial advisor to find different financing solutions, not wanting to go to possibly debt financing, not wanting to go to some of the other options that have failed with a lot of these companies. And without the activity, there aren't the revenues to justify paying the person to write the research. So there's New York-based Cantor Fitzgerald, which has dropped covering U.S. marijuana companies. New York-based Cohen, which was recently acquired by TD Bank, has no longer covering the U.S. cannabis companies. And John DeCourcy, who is a former analyst covering the cannabis industry, is no longer with financial services firm BTIG, and he is now the head of investor relations at Florida-based multi-state cannabis operator Ayr Wellness, according to DeCourcy's LinkedIn profile. But essentially, a lot of the people who used to be covering this are not covering it. Obviously, there still are some analysts covering the sector. But a big issue is the fact that there's been a lot of early optimism talking about the Safe Banking Act, talking about changes that could happen in the U.S., talking about, you know, federal decriminalization. None of those things have actually happened. And a lot of them have just been sort of a bait and switch over and over again. And I think for a lot of the retail investors who are involved in this, most of them made their money early on. And some of them have moved on to other sectors. Some of them are still holding on to some of their assets and just sort of waiting it out to see when any sort of meaningful change happens to the industry. And there's a lot of different options, or sorry, not options, a lot of different problems that are affecting the industry. And as you can see, all of these problems kind of lead into the other one and create this system that basically starts eating itself. And obviously, if you've been paying attention to the sector, you're not confused about what's going on within the cannabis industry. You've seen a lot of these companies have their stocks pretty much tank over the last couple of years. They've had, obviously, some good moments. But in general, even though a lot of these companies are continuing to get higher revenue, they are getting higher sales, they are expanding into bigger markets, they just have such a high overhead. They're struggling with maintaining financing. They're struggling with a lot of different things. That even with some of those positive numbers, all of the negative factors kind of cancel that out. And we're seeing this, that relates always to the stock prices. And because the stocks really don't show a lot of interest, analysts aren't showing interest, and that also gets less interest from investors, and even less interest from basically the entire news industry, which now, again, is mostly just putting out news articles that are kind of trash pieces about, you know, how cannabis is possibly linked to dangerous things, how, you know, there's all of these half-assed research studies that show, oh, it could lead to schizophrenia, it could lead to increase in depression, could lead to an increase in this, even though there's just an insane amount of studies and data out there that show that these are actually things that cannabis can help treat, not things that they help cause in people. So definitely not looking great right now for the summer for cannabis, but hopefully things can turn around as a few more companies do improve their finances by just being more strategic with their operations, looking at different market shares they can enter into, looking at different product development. But at some point, really, we're kind of hitting a stall where regulations will need to change in some certain states or in Canada. Federal changes within the U.S. would be the biggest thing. And I think until you really see that, the industry is going to continue to be quite stagnant, which is obviously there's a good time right now for long-term investors of the industry to be buying into some of these companies that they think can last through this storm. And obviously, if there is any meaningful change to safe banking, to federal decriminalization in the U.S., a lot of those stocks are going to rally quite aggressively. So there definitely is a good strategy there for long-term investors. But when it comes to short and mid-term investing, the cannabis industry does not look that great right now. And because of that, you're losing a lot of interest from a lot of different people, which is creating this sort of snowball effect, which is quite unfortunate to see. So that's all for today's podcast. Enjoy the rest of your day. That's all for today's podcast. Podcast is now a certified word trademark on the blockchain through Cognate Incorporated CM certification. InvestorIdeas.com podcasts are also available on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play Music, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, and TuneIn. If you'd like to be a guest or sponsor of this podcast, please contact InvestorIdeas.com. Investor Ideas reminds all listeners to read our disclaimers and disclosures on the investorideas.com website, and this podcast is not an endorsement to buy products or services or securities. Investors are reminded that all investments involve risk and possible loss of investment. Investor Ideas does not condone the use of cannabis except where permissible by law. Our site does not possess, distribute, or sell cannabis products.